Just us being thorough.
Zuck's doing a dramatic reading.
Thank you. We're back on the record after our break. And NSP, are you ready to call your next witness?
Yes, Your Honor. We call Mr. Kurt Hager.
Mr. Hager, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you on the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You may begin.
Good morning, Mr. Hager. Do you have an opening statement that you'd like to give?
I do.
Would you go ahead and do that for the record?
I am Kurt Hager, Area Vice President of Resource Planning for Xcel Energy. I coordinate the resource planning function for the company and have worked in the area of resource planning for more than 20 years. I provided direct, rebuttal, and supplemental rebuttal testimony in this case, focusing primarily on the resource planning principles that support the company's requested ADP. In this opening statement, I want to focus on a couple of important items for the Commission's consideration. There's been quite a lot of discussion on this record about divergent energy policies between North Dakota and Minnesota. The message in my and other company witnesses' testimony, however, is that this case is not really about divergent energy policies. Rather, this case is about the timing of deploying very low-priced combined cycle generation that was selected through a robust competitive process that found the Mankato Expansion PPA to be a least cost resource. In many ways, the process we went through that resulted in selecting the Mankato PPA is fully consistent with North Dakota policy preferences to focus on least cost principles and identified needs. The company does not dispute that the proposed 2019 start date for this PPA is somewhat earlier than is reflected in the company's loads and resources tables. While the LNR tables should be considered, it is only one data point in the analysis. Overall, the record is clear that in light of the company's recent resource plan update that we filed on October 2nd, the Mankato PPA is needed no later than 2023. Even staff witness Mr. Pollock recognizes the project is needed in 2025. The company acknowledges that the 2019 start date for this resource is less than ideal, but that timing was driven by the bid we received from Calpine. Calpine has made it clear that it will not hold the project or its advantageous pricing open for us indefinitely. Thus, we were left with the choice of accepting the project somewhat earlier than shown on our LNR tables or foregoing the advantageous pricing and system flexibility this project offers us. The data point provided by our LNR tables is an important input into the Commission's consideration of this case. Indeed, staff's testimony focuses almost exclusively on this single criterion. But I believe the LNR tables provided only a single data point that should be weighed among a number of important factors. Other variables that are described in more detail in my testimony include evolving reserve margin requirements, changing coincident or non-coincident peak factors, changing economic conditions, and the impact of reliability of plant operations on our capacity accreditation. My testimony provides a discussion of some other factors that should go into the Commission's consideration. These include, most importantly, the advantageous pricing offered in the Mankato PPA. This PPA offers us combined cycle capacity and energy for the same overall cost of less efficient combustion turbines. Enhanced optionality that allows the company the ability to accelerate the retirement of some of our oldest and least efficient peakers. Having a modest amount of length on the system in early 2020 provides us significant system flexibility to react to evolving circumstances, such as an anticipated MISO-wide capacity retirement, planned 2023 retirement of coal unit Sherco number 2, an uncertain environmental regulatory environment, and overall low capacity surplus margins. I want to reinforce that last point. Overall, our capacity surplus is not very large. Take into consideration the 10,000 megawatt NSP system. Under the new evolving MISO protocol, capacity protocols, we are required to carry approximately 7.1% in planning reserves. But the MISO rules do not account for all types of variables and contingencies. MISO's reserve margin calculations are based on the concept that the utility knows their load and with perfect foresight, and that the utility's generation model and outage rates will be similar to what they've been in the past. The MISO reserve margin is really intended to compensate for unplanned outages and reduced availability of generation resources in the very next year, along with higher loads due to temperature variations than loads in utility forecasts determining the planning reserve margin. It does not consider any additional cushion to address changes in individual utility issues. Further, the MISO rules continue to evolve as MISO refines its processes. Over the past couple of years, their planning reserve margins have moved around a fair amount. Since the company cannot afford to be caught short, this all means that we need to plan for greater reserves than the bare minimum at this time. In my opinion, NSP should have an additional 200 to 500 megawatts of reserve capacity above and beyond the bare minimum required by MISO based on the level of uncertainty we are experiencing today. The Mankato PPA provides a modest amount of additional capacity that is consistent with ensuring we have enough to address all reasonable contingencies. This, in addition to the advantageous pricing we were able to capture, further supports capturing this low-cost combined cycle resource in 2019 when it was offered. Further, we expect our system to continue evolving and changing significantly over the next two decades as several significant generation sources reach their end of life. We believe that a view of future composition makeup of our system will help to demonstrate the prudence of adding the competitively priced combined cycle energy provided by the Mankato PPA at the time is being made available by the vendor. In my supplemental rebuttal, I discussed the company's updated resource plan and some of the significant generation changes we are expecting. In the coming decade, we are faced with a number of major decisions about our aging system and the impact of future environmental compliance and those costs. In particular, a number of these changes are necessitated by our aging system and increasing difficulties we have in maintaining baseload coal generation in a cost-effective manner. In our updated resource plan, we described our proposal to cease coal operations at our Sherco 2 and Unit Number 1 coal plants in 2023 and 2026, respectively. The Mankato PPA, as well as adding a large combustion turbine generator in Northeast Dakota, would contribute significantly capacity towards the ability to replace this 1,400 megawatts of capacity. Based on our proposed plan, the Mankato PPA is needed no later than 2023. Based on the advantageous pricing and other benefits I've described, I think it is appropriate to capture this capacity in 2019 when it is offered and have it available to support our plan. Finally, I discussed the company's concern over what could happen if the commission denies this ADP. The company has operated an integrated five-state system for many years and is a clear preference of ours to continue to do so. While I respect the Commission's right and duty to focus on North Dakota customers and policies, I urge the Commission to do so in a broader context of the overall benefits and economies of being able to participate in a 10,000-megawatt system. While this ADP proceeding calls for the Commission to focus on a particular resource addition, we think it is important to take into account other factors and developments and that the Commission make a decision in the larger context of the integrated NSP system. Importantly, I note that the company has recently committed, subject to Commission approval, to file a resource treatment framework, typically what we've been calling the RESTAC, that is intended to address circumstances where all of the jurisdictions in which we serve customers may not agree on particular resources. This resource treatment framework will take into account these issues on a holistic basis and provide a framework for us to address the very challenging rate-making, accounting, and operational issues that come with such outcomes. Xcel Energy has worked hard to find ways to accommodate North Dakota policy preferences regarding renewable generation, and we have found ways to accept the Commission's denial of the ADP of the Aurora and the 187-megawatt solar projects. It would be much more challenging for us to accept a denial of an ADP in this case. Given this, we must also be cautious not to make long-lasting decisions based upon one resource that would provide long-lasting benefits to the entire NSP system. As I mentioned, this case is not actually about divergent energy policies, but I believe it's rather about the timing of securing the benefits of a least cost combined cycle expansion at an existing site that was obtained through a robust competitive process. In short, you get all of the value of this resource for the value of a combustion turbine. This I urge the Commission to agree with the company that under the totality of the circumstances, not just part of our L&R table, procuring the Mankato PPA beginning in 2019 is prudent.
Thank you, Mr. Hager. Mr. Hager is available for cross-examination.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, any questions?
No questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Armstrong?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Hager, do you agree that considering the company's updated, the recent updated forecast should be considered in determining the prudence of this project?
I think you have to take into consideration all of the facts, yes.
And the updated forecasts indicate there's not a need for this capacity until 2024.
No. When you look in totality of looking at the
I asked about the forecasts. I'm wondering what the forecasts show.
Correct.
And Mr. Johnson indicate he agrees that the need is for this capacity is not until 2024?
I thought you were saying, taking into account the October 2nd filing the company made,
I'm talking about the forecast. That filing deals with the updated resource plan, correct?
Well, the establishment of need is based upon a forecast of load and the resources.
I'm asking what the forecast show, that it's needed in 2024. Is that correct or not?
No.
When did the forecast show you need the power?
Based upon the October 2nd filing, we would need it in 2023.
In the October 2nd filing, the reason you need it in 2023 is because you're retiring Sherco 2 early.
Correct.
And that decision was apparently made sometime between your September testimony and your October 2nd SIR rebuttal.
That is correct.
Things are changing rather quickly then, I take it.
Yes.
And much of your testimony deals on the high uncertainty involved in the market, the environment, the economic conditions, would you agree?
Yes.
And some of that uncertainty is created by Xcel by updating and continually updating its resource plan.
Actually, I think we have an obligation to continue to update, and actually by proposing a plan, we're trying to take some uncertainty out of that and actually establish some certainty by giving a plan that people can then evaluate and consider as opposed to hypothetical discussions.
Sure. And couldn't you take out some of that uncertainty by waiting 3 years when you still have plenty of time to bring this plant into operation by the time the company needs it before seeking prudence?
Is your question whether we could wait 3 years for the Calpine?
There would be less uncertainty about MISO reserve margins, environmental regulation, in the next 3 years, you'd anticipate that, correct?
I think, in general, waiting as long as you can would make sense. In this case, because the Calpine is a very low-cost resource and it's available to us now, we have to make the decision whether we go forward with it today or not.
So with all the uncertainty out there, the only certainty that would result in a determination of prudence at this time is NSP would recover its cost for the project.
No, I think what we have to look at is we always have to balance cost and certainty and the uncertainty that surrounds our lives every day in this world. And so what we're laying out is the fact is with certainty we know we can get a combined cycle resource that is a much more efficient natural gas resource at essentially the cost of a combustion turbine. And the cost of a combustion turbine should always be your market entrance, should be your lowest cost capacity resource.
It's possible you might get that 3 years from now, isn't it?
The possibility exists, but I wouldn't count on it.
In the retiring of Sherco, which moves the anticipated need of this project up to 2023, then, is based on, it would this project replace what Mr. Clark classified as a lowest cost generation source.
Again, you're caught in the situation of what is the lowest cost generation resource at the time. If you look at a Sherco units today, Sherco operates on a variable basis of around $28 a megawatt hour. With gas prices at $2.50, a combined cycle would actually be a lower cost resource on an energy basis than the coal plants. And so you have to take in totality of exactly all of the variables in consideration. And that's one of the things that I bring into account in my testimony. If you look at the variability of natural gas pricing and what has happened to the forecasts of natural gas pricing, they've come down dramatically. And they come down to the point that natural gas is competing against even coal generation.
As we sit here today, you would agree with me that Mr. Clark just testified that Sherco is its, I think he said, lowest cost generator.
I think, again, I can't understand, I can't know exactly what Mr. Clark is looking at. I know the facts that I have, and the fact is that that generation is about $26 to $28 a megawatt hour, and the natural gas today is competing against that.
How long after, if Sherco 2 were to be shut down in 2023, how long after that would North Dakota ratepayers still be paying for Sherco?
I think that's actually something that will have to be worked out in the case. Right now, I believe the book life in Minnesota is 2023, but I understand the book life in North Dakota may be longer. And I believe that will be one of the issues that will have to be worked out is, do you accelerate the recovery of anything that would be left on the books in North Dakota, or would you go ahead and extend that as it is today?
So you accelerate the recovery. North Dakota is paying additional money for Sherco and additional money for this project when it's not needed until 2023 or 2024. North Dakota customers.
It has the potential that there would be a cost increase associated with the retirement of Sherco and the acceptance of this early.
It has the potential. It's likely that's going to happen, right?
Again, we'll have to wait and see how all the figures out with natural gas costs versus coal. Again, it's much more complicated. We can forecast what we think is going to happen.
Yeah, I understand. I understand there's a lot of complication involved, but I think further complicating it or saying what may or may not happen, it's most likely that the North Dakota customer base is going to get hit with those additional costs, isn't it?
Correct. In our filing, we project today that we expect that there will be an additional cost.
Thank you. And a lot of your testimony deals with the high uncertainty and the volatility of the markets. You would agree with that, right?
Yeah, uncertainty in total.
But really, we don't... There's not a lot of volatility in your demand forecast, is there?
There's huge volatility in our demand forecast. If you
Haven't
look
the
back,
last four shown a slackening of demand?
It has, but it's also
based on 2011 and 2010 that showed higher demand originally.
What was your question?
This case originally came about from the 2010 and 2011 demand forecast, right?
We actually started in 2010 with a demand forecast.
And those haven't played out.
Correct.
The last four show a slackening demand.
Correct.
In your testimony, you also discussed the MISO reserve margin and the methodology and reliability criteria is relatively new. Would you agree with that?
Correct. MISO implemented...
It's relatively new, right?
Yes.
And you're still trying to get your hands around that project or the effect of those processes at MISO, right?
Yes.
And you expect that'll be less uncertain 3 years from now?
We would hope so.
And if for whatever reason, from now until, say, 2023 or 24, the company happens to be short on load, being a member of MISO allows you to purchase additional load on the MISO market?
Not necessarily.
Okay, if you were short, then how would you go about getting additional load?
We might have to build a generator in an emergency.
Would you try to buy from MISO first?
We might try to buy from other members in MISO. You can't buy from MISO.
MISO auction?
Again, you'd buy from other members through the MISO auction,
haven't
if available.
Historically, the cost of purchasing that additional load been very low?
In a area of surplus, yes.
Are we in an area of surplus right now?
We don't know what it'll be in the future. Today we are. In the future, we don't know.
And when we talk about being what I think you classify as a conservative approach, MISO's reserve margin is 7.1% above what the company believes it needs. Is that correct?
No. The reserve margin is a calculation based upon what MISO believes they need as far as resources to cover outages, to cover forecasts. Because we forecast, we design to the median 50-50 level. We don't forecast, we don't design to the hottest day level. And so the MISO reserve margin is above and beyond that to take into considerations the things that they look at and control. Then it's up to the utility to make sure its forecasts are right, its generation's available, and that it has the resources necessary.
And basically, the reserve margin is a margin above your peak demand coincident with the MISO system peak.
It's above the non-coincidental peak demand of the MISO system. And again, it is in regards to the requirements that MISO has for us to maintain.
And is your understanding that's because MISO coordinates the transmission and generation across 15 states so it can spread out the need issues better than would be required on a standalone company basis?
Yes.
So doesn't building generation, when it's not needed, erode the value of being a member of MISO?
No, not necessarily at all.
So kind of then?
No. I mean, the benefit of MISO is that, again, through central dispatch, we hopefully lower costs. I think through the ability to look at a broader footprint. The issue there is we don't know with certainty what we're going to have in 2023 or 2024 or 2025. We have to balance potential costs and expected futures.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your rebuttal testimony on its pages 21 and 22 of your rebuttal testimony. And it was unclear to me, but you discussed the cost and other implications of denying this resource raise serious questions about the long-term viability of the company's integrated system.
What page are you on, Mitch?
Page 21 to 22 of Exhibit 8.
The rebuttal testimony?
Yes. I guess my question is, doesn't that seem like an overstated impact for a company with 10,000 megawatt system when this is 375 megawatts?
I think the issue there is once we start breaking down the compact and we start planning for North Dakota separately, again, if you look at North Dakota, roughly out of this 15 megawatts, and if we start planning potentially for North Dakota in a separate fashion that they're not part of that integrated system, the question then becomes, and we go, if it's denied and we were to go sell that capacity to somebody else, and therefore it's not available to North Dakota going forward, and then when we come to have the North Dakota need and another proceeding to establish what resource that might be necessary to serve that, then you start having potentially small units. You'll have a different cost of service. And I think that starts to break down the compact of operating together. And I think that's what we're trying to bring across here, is that if we go down that road, which we don't want to go down, I think it does bring into question of how do you do then integrated planning.
Company's already got an advanced termination of prudence for two Red River Valley units, doesn't it?
And so if we move forward with one of those units and assigned it to North Dakota in total, and North Dakota then would have 15 megawatts out of 185, and that we would go down that path, it certainly then would start to break apart the kind of integrated planning.
Why would you have to assign to North Dakota in total? You don't assign Minnesota projects to Minnesota in total.
Again, that's what we're debating here, right? Yeah. If Minnesota makes decisions and you don't want to pay for it and you want those costs assigned to Minnesota, and North Dakota makes decisions and they want those costs, and Minnesota says we don't want those costs assigned to us because we don't view our plan, that's when it starts to break down this thing.
So it sounds to me like there actually is a policy difference at play here.
Well, I think there is a difference of opinion, whether it's really a fundamental energy policy, which was historically what we've been talking about, which is wind and solar resources and are they cost effective or not, versus this may be a difference of opinion, but I don't view it as a difference of really policy.
I guess if we boil it down, I heard Mr. Clark testify that basically whether something's prudent, I think he said, boils down to need, timing, and price. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, in totality, yes.
So we don't need this till 2023 or 2024.
Our current projections,
without taking into account
any of the uncertainties, we would suggest that you don't need it till 23. But again, that is very key.
Agree the timing.
Assuming nothing
not
would
ideal.
Change.
You agree the timing's not ideal.
Correct.
But the price is just really good.
Compared to the time difference versus the price, yes. I think the price overwhelms it.
But in your updated resource plan, you're retiring a significant number of units earlier than anticipated.
Again, the Sherco units, some people would look at they're actually living through their full life. I think what we look at it as retiring them early.
But it's not just Sherco. There's peaker units and I forget what the other one is. It's not just Sherco that's being retired earlier.
Actually, we extended the lives of some of the peakers, and now we have the ability to question if we should shorten that life back up.
So given the price is the major thing, if you're taking off even more generation than you anticipated, isn't there a decent possibility you could benefit from economies of scale by replacing all of those with a bigger unit in a few years?
Actually, we're getting the economy scales of this unit that even beats a future larger unit. I have not seen in the last 10 years of all my resource planning across multiple jurisdictions a combined cycle that costs as low as this.
Sure, but you need to replace a lot of generation if what occurs in your updated resource plan comes to fruition, don't you?
We do. And like you said, to the extent that we were to be able to look at a larger, more efficient combined cycle in the future, I have not seen in 10 years something to beat this combined cycle.
Whether it's combined cycle or some other form, you need to replace a large chunk of energy if you follow through on the, or capacity if you follow through on the updated resource plan.
And we'll certainly need combined cycle. And so, again, I'm getting the cost of combined cycle at a CT price.
I'd like to talk a little more about your Surrey rebuttal now in its Exhibit 10. Commissioners and Council. And as I understand, are you ready, Mr. Hager?
Yes.
As I understand it, the updated resource plan came as a result of comments received on July 2nd, 2015. In proceedings underway in Minnesota?
The reply comments came as a part of the overall case timing. So we were going to file reply comments on October 2nd based upon the schedule put forth. Our reply comments that we actually filed are not necessarily just in response to comments other people filed. It certainly incorporated those, but is it our proposed modification to our plan going forward?
At least as I understood what was in your testimony on page 3 was that your updated resource plan was in response to comments the company received on July 2nd, 2015. That was simply what my question was.
as one component.
I understand that. Is that what it was? This is the response to those comments from July 2nd, 2015?
Your Honor asked and answered.
Sustained.
And page 7 of the updated plan that was attached to your testimony indicates that in the process of developing that update, you moved the closing of the Sherco units out later than what some shareholders were advocating to adjust for construction timelines, system reliability, and workforce transition. Is that correct?
Correct.
And those could be delayed even further, correct?
We could. Again, in when we're looking at it in the totality of our system, we have 75% of our baseload potentially retiring between 2023 and 2035. And to make sure that we have a coordinated plan and that we don't impact reliability, we want to do it somewhat ratably. And so we came up with our plan, our modified plan, to do one unit in 23, one in 26, one in 30, the Prairie Island units in 33 and 34 potentially, and then King would be up for discussion in 37.
And this purchase power agreement we're talking about today runs until when?
If it started in 2019, it would run until 2039.
And which stakeholders advocated shutting down Sherco 2 and Sherco 1 earlier?
As Mr. Clark indicated, the environmentalist suggested a group in 21 and 24, I believe, and the department suggested in 25.
And those new resources being considered would still be subject to Minnesota approval.
Yes.
And the technical feasibility of the proposal is still under study?
Correct. We just proposed it on October 2nd.
So as we sit here today, we don't even know if it's feasible.
We don't know what they're going to determine, and we certainly don't know what this commission is going to determine either.
And the company needs MISO approval to implement the closings we discussed earlier?
I'm sorry, what?
The company needs MISO approval to implement the closings discussed in the update.
Yes, we'll ultimately have to request approval from MISO to close the plants also.
And it's possible this resource plan is going to change again in the future, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Probably likely.
I don't know how likely, but it certainly has a potential.
Just another high uncertainty we have in the future?
Correct.
Nothing further.
Any questions from PSC staff?
I believe I read in your testimony, perhaps in the summary, that Calpine would not wait indefinitely. But have you asked Calpine to wait a year or 2 years?
I believe in the initial discussions that Calpine had proposed a potential delay charge. I could go look exactly. I believe there is a, if we delay it 1 year, that there was a charge of, I think, $19 million or something like that. But I would actually have to go and look to see what that delay charge was initially set at in that contract.
Any discussion of that would be a trade secret. Just throw that out there.
Maybe we could put that on the list of things to discuss when we do trade secret, the impacts of delay.
That would be fine.
And I think Mr. Johnson probably could deal with that in totality of the trade secret information.
Okay. Now, a couple of you have already discussed a little bit and kind of danced around the Red River Valley units, but plainly speaking, the reason why this would be preferable to you now than building one of those is because of cost, is because
Correct.
Of the lowest status of the cost for this one?
Correct.
Okay. Again, we may have to get in a little bit to where the breaking point is on that if we get to the trade secret. But that's all I have right now. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Commissioner Cock?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Kurt, for your testimony. I just have just a couple of quick questions. And this will be a speculation on your part, but who else is Calpine going to sell it to?
Well,
you guys are the biggest show in town.
Minnesota Power is probably going to be looking for resources. Otter Tail may be looking for resources.
They'd have to come in front of us.
For Minnesota, again, to their to extent
just,
that they're looking
I just make my point that, and here's the skeptic in me, has Xcel ever entered into purchase power agreements that were a really good deal and companies couldn't actually deliver those great prices and you ended up buying the resources yourself?
Certainly we have.
Right. So how can this be such a really good deal? What makes it such a good, that's the skeptic in me. And why don't you just, if you don't need it now, let's just say you don't, why don't you just build it yourself in a few years?
So the Calpine Mankato facility was built out for a two-on-one when they originally constructed the facility. They have natural gas access to the plant. They have transmission access to the plant. And what they have to do is put in an additional combustion turbine into the existing plant. Essentially, the rest of the back-end plant is already prepared for it. And so this is a unique situation. That's why we see, I think, the pricing on this compared to any other combined cycle. And so that is why the price is so low, because of the way they constructed the original phase.
Okay, but still back to the point, why wouldn't you just build your own? You'd be that big a price difference down the road, given all the uncertainty you don't know, seems to me.
There's actually a pretty significant price difference between.
Have you modeled that somewhere?
Yes.
Based on what assumptions that we won't know 3 years from now?
Well, again, when we look at ordering turbines, we look at cost of building out a plant. We've certainly been estimating the combined cycle at Black Dog. We're looking at the combined cycle at Sherco. So we actually have a pretty good idea of what those future costs are going to look like, and they're significantly higher than the build out of the Mankato facility.
Right. Thanks, Kurt.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thanks, Kurt. Just to follow up a bit on Commissioner Kulk's question, can you be a little more specific on in terms of what factors make you suspicious of the company's ability to get a similar priced resource in 2023 when it's needed?
Again, when I look at the cost of not only our own construction of our new units, but I look across, again, all of the portfolios that I look at, whether it's the bids we received in Colorado or the bids that we received in Texas, I don't see any combined cycle that comes close to matching the Calpine price. And so that's the difference, is Calpine's in a situation that they essentially have to add a combustion turbine, and that's one of the reasons I think they're able to offer us this pricing at that level, because that's about all the work they have to do.
So it's the basically the factors of that particular site. It already has the gas. It's already connected to the grid. You're just adding another generator.
And the back end of the plant is already constructed in a way that allows that to be integrated.
So someone's going to take advantage of that between now and 2023.
I do believe so.
Okay, and we'll get into the costs later with Paul. Okay. You talked a bit about the retiring of the peakers. Can you talk, and it's been referenced at a few points in the testimony, but I'm not sure I understand why it's an advantage to retire those peaking units early and replace it with this. What are the benefits of that?
So originally, in trying to give ourselves more flexibility, we moved out the retirement date of the Blue Lake units and the Granite City units.
Well, how do you base? This is confusing to me, too. Like, how can these retirement dates be so flexible? What factors go into deciding what a retirement date is?
Usually the expected ongoing capital and maintenance, of the facility, And so we'll go to our energy supply group and we'll ask them, what is it going to cost to keep a plant open? And they'll look at it and say, do they have to do any major maintenance? You know, is the major maintenance still a couple years away? And what is the actual cost compared to what it would cost to replace it with another unit? Mm-hmm. And when we looked at these units, we felt that there was some flexibility to actually move out the date.
So it would have been easier or cheaper to maintain them than to replace them?
Yes. Now, there's always higher risk because once you maintain a plant for a longer period of time, you're under higher risk of catastrophic failure.
Sure.
And so that was the risk that we were trying to evaluate. Once we saw the bid price, and again, if you go back to what we asked for in the resource plan, we asked to keep the bids available but to delay the proceeding to see if we could get a later date because 17, 18, 19 was a little bit early. Mm-hmm. But we also knew that this was a very good, well-priced offer. We didn't want to let it go. We just wanted to see how far we could push it back. And so that's the situation we're in today.
So you were going to retire them, then you saw the price of this resource and thought, okay, now that formula doesn't work out. Now, once you consider the ongoing costs of maintenance and the cost of replacement, the formula weighs in favor of replacing.
Correct.
Because of the price of this resource.
Price of this resource, the availability of the resource, and then the ability to save that maintenance capital and ongoing of the other peakers.
So when you retire these early, will it be less? Are you saying it will be less expensive for your company to run these than the peakers?
In totality, over the full life of the asset, it'll be less expensive. Now, the difficulty is the early years, right, between 19 and 23. It certainly has the potential for more cost to run the facility and pay for the facility than it does the maintenance of the peakers. So, again, that's one factor we include, but it wasn't the only factor.
When we go through the costs, will we see someplace the factors of now the cost of running these peakers is off and that has a number attached to it?
I do not know if we actually provided that. We could certainly give you an estimate of what that is, but I don't know if we provide it. You might ask Mr. Johnson that.
Okay. Let's see here. In your testimony, your October 2nd testimony, you say on page 6 that the undertaking the Mankato PPA, as it's being made available, is similar to adding low-cost wind resources to our system as production tax credits are available, regardless of need. So when I compare adding a wind purchase without, you know, regardless of need, it's displacing more expensive generation. Is that what you're saying here?
I was looking at it from a capacity standpoint.
Okay, so explain that to me.
So when we add a wind resource like a wind PPA, we may not need the capacity, but the overall totality of the value of the energy and getting the production tax credit made sense to us because in totality over the life of the asset, we're going to save money. And even though we may not be able to capture the value of the capacity in the first couple years as we were along, the totality of having the resource over the full life makes sense.
Okay. So the energy will be cheaper?
Yes. Over the long term, the energy will be cheaper.
When you were planning in this and you proposed the I just need a reminder how this all worked again. You proposed the Blacktog and the Red River Valley units. Did you not know about this at this point? Was Calpine not on the table? If it's such a good deal, why wasn't this part of your original preferred plan and what you were pushing at the commission?
So the process we started off in Minnesota is what we call a Track 2 process, which means we bring forth our resource that we would like to construct. Mm-hmm. And then others are allowed to bid in against us.
Yeah.
And so we started with actually the Black Dog combined cycle, and we pulled that off the table
and then put the Black Dog CT and the Red River CTs in as our option. And then at that time is when Invenergy, Calpine, others bid in their projects against our project. So we didn't know what they would.
The Minnesota Commission said, we like this.
Yes.
And but you still, did you agree then? Or were you still saying, no, we like this other better?
The lowest cost combination that we put forward and that ultimately came out of this process was the Black Dog CT and the Calpine Mankato build-out.
Okay. So when you were advocating for Black Dog and Red River, you didn't have this option.
Correct.
On the table. Are there other reasons why this location makes more sense first as a first addition to your system versus Eastern North Dakota?
Again, this location has the gas pipeline already into the site. It has a transmission access.
Okay, besides cost, though, those are kind of cost issues, really.
Besides cost?
Right. Operational reliability. Are there other issues why this location in Mankato is preferable? No. You could operate in North Dakota just the same. You'd have the same system benefits.
Correct.
Would there be advantages that aren't by of being in North Dakota first that aren't realized by this one?
There could be potentially some transmission advantages to having a generating unit in eastern North Dakota.
Okay, then you heard me talk to Mr. Clark about the MISO planning process. Can you expand a bit on that conversation? I want to better understand what you tell MISO, what they look at, how in-depth their knowledge is of your system, and, you know, how they're looking, what their long-term look is versus the 1 year.
Okay. MISO is chartered with running a independent transmission system. And so they don't do resource planning and they don't do generation planning. What they do is they do transmission planning and transmission operations and system reliability. And so they count...
System reliability then automatically gets into generation planning.
Not necessarily. They rely on us to do the generation planning and forward the information to them, and they review that. And they would raise concerns like Claire Moeller from MISO was doing, saying, we think the generation plans of the utilities and the participants in MISO are not adequate. And that's where he was out on his bandwagon talking to utility commissions that you have to do something to raise the level of generation planning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're, go ahead, I interrupted you.
No. So they don't do generation, they like, but they also have an obligation to look at utilities and independent generators the same across the board. They don't give utilities any favorable treatment. So when they look at a system, they have to take into account wind developers, Calpine, an independent power producer, Invenergy, what they're proposing. They have to treat everybody consistent. So, again, they're trying to manage the development of a transmission system and the dispatch of a transmission system in a way that gives no preferential treatment to utilities versus others. They also are looking at a system that you might have somebody that wants to build out the Mankato facility and serve a customer in eastern Wisconsin or Iowa or something like that. Because, again, the idea of MISO is to make that resource deliverable to the system and make it deliverable to that customer at remote locations. That's the benefit of MISO. So MISO looks at something very different. They're at a completely different planning level than utilities. They count on the utilities and market participants to either through formal requests for interconnection or through resource planning processes to give them the information so that they can look at it. Now, establishing the reserve margin is not resource planning. Establishing the reserve margin takes the assets on a system and does basically a complex set of analyses to figure out what's the loss of load probability with those resources. And based upon that complex analysis, they come up with what they think is the reserve margin that's necessary to overcome the loss of units, different temperatures, and things like that. But again, that's a reliability function, not a planning function. The planning function lays with the utilities. And so we
But if you're always meeting the reliability obligation, then you're doing proper planning.
But again, they assume that our forecast is known with perfect foresight, that our resources will run exactly the way they'll look. And again, MISO doesn't give us long-term commitments. They give us commitments a year at a time. And so MISO holds the cards. They can come back and say, the non-coincidental peak factor of 95% isn't working anymore. We're going to change it to 97. Now you got to supply 2% more. They can do that within a very short time frame. We're the ones that have to react, not MISO.
So what, if I boil down what your position is, MISO looks short-term. You guys are obligated to look long-term, and this is a long-term resource?
Yes.
That isn't needed in the short term?
That isn't needed potentially in the short term.
All right. Do you know where you guys rank in terms of size, the 10,000 megawatt system in MISO? Are you one of the biggest players?
I do not know our size. I know that in the voting structure of MISO, we have one vote within the transmission owners group. So we're actually not that large in the voting side. I don't know, though, customer-wise.
All right. Do you have access to information from MISO in terms of retirement system-wide? Because you reference one of the issues, one of the uncertainties being in the pre-2023 years is this notion that there might be other retirements in the MISO system that could make the availability of power purchase from them difficult. Do you know those?
MISO does provide us some statistics about what they get from other utilities as far as their retirement schedules, and that's exactly what Claire Moeller was out talking about, is that they were getting information that I think somewhere between 6 and 10,000 megawatts of units would be retiring in the 16 to 2020 timeframe.
Hasn't he since adjusted that concern? The last time I heard from Claire Moeller was probably in the summer at the New York NARUC, and I thought that he gave a very different presentation than the one where he was talking about the shortages. Is the most recent predictions or projections from MISO projecting this shortage?
The last one that I saw showed that R zone, which would be the old MAP zone or the Minnesota, Wisconsin, western part of it. And again, this is what we were working with. We're relatively decent. I think we were within a couple hundred megawatts of balance going forward. I think the big concern was around Detroit Edison and that part of Michigan, Ohio. The last that I saw, I think they were still expecting potentially 3,000 to 4,000 megawatts of shortage in that region. But I think, again, if you read my testimony, one of the things that got us a little more comfortable where MISO was moving is that they were breaking it down into subregions and not just saying that everybody was going to be short, but they were trying to work with the participants in those regions to understand who was actually going to be short and what plans they had.
And we should be concerned about the shortage in any region just because it speaks to the potential lack of availability for you if you're short?
Couple things, right? To the extent that people do have a lot of retirements, there's going to be increased competition for new equipment. That means GE, Siemens, those people And they tell us today, because we're actually bidding on combustion turbines for Black Dog and a unit down in Texas, that they can give us one pricing today, but if we wait a couple years, it's going to be, they think, something higher because of that competition. That's one aspect of it. The second aspect is, again, to the extent that MISO does a pro rata cut on load because of shortage of generation, that one entity can get fined for it, but we're going to suffer for it. And I know MISO's been working on that response because that concerns us a lot. I don't understand.
So in other words, if
MISO shorted generation,
mm-hmm.
and the only way they can balance is to shed load. Because if they're short of generation, okay. they have to shed load because they have to stay in balance every minute. And so to the extent that MISO is short on generation, they will shed load across the footprint. Now, that's an item that we've been working on. I don't know the exact status of those discussions, but that's where they have been, is that they would do a pro rata curtailment.
And then the person that caused it or the entity that caused it gets fined.
Yes.
But everybody, all the customers.
And we might get some compensation suffer. From that, but customers would still potentially have to shed load.
Okay. I'm still struggling with the whole reason to go above what MISO reserve margin requires. In 2023, when everybody agrees there's need, are you going above the MISO reserve margin then?
Yeah, I think in 2023 under our plan, we're still 200 megawatts long, I think, in 2020, or 300 megawatts long in 2023.
And how much long would we be in the earlier years, 19 to 23, based on today's projections?
I think 700 megawatts, 800 megawatts. And that's if all of the resources... get included.
Meaning what? If all the resources get included?
We proposed, obviously, the Black Dog, the Mankato, the wind resources that we've asked to be advanced, the solar resources, all of the community gardens that are in our LNR, all of those resources, including the North Dakota combustion turbine. In 2023.
Okay. And the Minnesota Commission
just to correct the record,
that's prudent.
Mr. Simpson handed me this. We actually have between 700 and 900 megawatts.
Okay. Okay. Let's see here. I think I'm getting close to being done, Kurt. So if I'm going to go to North Dakota customers and tell them that I thought this was prudent, how do I justify that to them? What are the reasons I tell them that this is why, even though it wasn't needed till 2023, this is why it benefits you now?
Okay. This is the difficult part of resource planning. It is always the balance between the uncertainties and the costs. The reason I'm a proponent of this is if I look at the uncertainties, I have 1,100 megawatts, to give you an example. I have 1,100 megawatts of load control. That means customers are willing to get off their use of electricity when called upon by the company or by MISO. We've just started a process of testing that. How many customers are going to respond? The customers have had this opportunity and have been saving money, large industrial customers, because they guaranteed that they could get off. Schools, things like that. Now we're going to start a testing process where they're actually going to be interrupted in the winter. MISO is going to see if they're going to call upon it. How many customers are going to decide that they can't actually be interrupted? In Texas, when this situation came about, SPP started to control the system. I lost 50% of my load relief, management relief, within about 18 months. 200 of the 400 said, we're out. We'll start paying full rates. We don't want the discount anymore. We don't want to be interrupted. That's just one uncertainty that we have. What's going to happen when those customers are faced with actual interruptions that they haven't been faced in for years? We're starting the testing of that. We'll know the results going forward.
So how do I give me the 30-second explanation to a customer of that?
So there are – this is a situation, and again, the 2 to 500 megawatts of length I say at this time, because in certain times I wouldn't have proposed to be that long. But MISO just changed the peak quiescent factor 2 years ago, brand new. They just went to the UCAT methodology 5 years ago. They just reduced the reserve margin. They're now starting to manage load control, and we're going to see what happens here. We're looking at major environmental policies that could cause major shifts in generation. You look at the uncertainty coming out of the load forecast. That's one thing that we look at. But we don't know, is this energy efficiency really going to be as strong as we think it is? Are we really going to be able to hit 1.5% energy efficiency goals in Minnesota? Or do some of those start going by the wayside because there's so much that was already built in with the new appliances? There is such a degree of uncertainty that I've never seen in my career before. And so when I look at the uncertainty associated with this, you've got a gas unit that is low cost. And yes, the timing is not perfect, but the fact is it's a combined cycle with a good gas supply, with known transmission. You don't have to worry about getting in a MISO Q study for 3 years. You know, this plant is ready to go. And the fact is that they offered us at this low a price against the potential risks of everything else that I deal with in my job. That's what I say. That's what moved the balance to accepting it now. Would it be that same answer 5 years ago if we would have seen this normal at Piesco, on Piesco system? I don't deal with any of the uncertainty about reserve margins. I don't have an RTO. We still do our own. We know exactly what kind of level of confidence we have. Mm-hmm. This is all new to us. And that's what I'm saying. It's better to be on the cautious side of all these things that are new than on the other side. And the fact is, even though there is cost, and I understand it's $1.5 million a year for North Dakota customers, but the long term, this is a good resource. And it provides the flexibility to make sure we maintain our system. Again, I don't view this as being the issue of solar or not solar in Minnesota policy. This is a good gas combined cycle unit. And I think actually with lower gas price forecasts, it'll probably provide us more benefit in the early years than we're even forecasting.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt.
Commissioner Christman.
So this wasn't where I was going originally, but I'll just pick up on that. The demand response programs, I'm hearing you saying that you're concerned that people who've talked about being on them are not going to be inclined to stay on them. Is that correct?
That's a concern. I don't know what they'll do, but that's a concern.
But it happened in Texas.
It did.
And I always thought that that was like a kind of a longer-term contract or something. So, and just for, I'm not a customer of your company, but with another company, can I sign up for a demand response program now and then about Christmas tell them I don't want it anymore until January and February are over and then go back on it until about late June? And is
no,
that possible?
The commitment levels are typically, and I'd have to see exactly what the Minnesota program is for each level, but it usually is typically 1 to 3 year commitment.
And even if they're experiencing something dramatic, if they're off, they're off in a time of high demand?
Potentially, yes.
Even if they call and say, there's a baby in the house and we're freezing to death here, they're just off, right?
Well, again, I can't answer every circumstance to the extent that if typically the residential customers would have it on their air conditioning unit. Okay. So that's what when they participate, it's a switch on their air conditioning. So they're not going to freeze the baby during the winter. To the extent a industrial commercial customer has to get off because we've called them or switch it, they can not. They can continue to use. We are not physically removing the meter, but they can be potentially penalized.
So your worry isn't so much this real quick flip-flopping, but just long-term that they're not going to continue with their demand response
Correct.
Programs. And frequently I hear people talking about surveys and such that customers are willing to pay more for renewable energy, but it always seems to be a very vague discussion without really getting into exactly how much more. Do you express concerns about people not really being willing to follow through on that when you're dealing with commissions around your five-state region?
So,
with regards to going to renewables?
Right. In Minnesota, we've certainly had discussions with customers. You know, would 2% be a cost that they would afford? In Colorado, we do have a 2% rider that's used for renewables. That was passed by the voters. They're comfortable with it. We use that to buy renewable energy. In New Mexico, we also have a mechanism that customers have agreed to pay a higher price for the renewables. And we have to stay within a budget in New Mexico also. So I see it at least in two jurisdictions for sure, and we have anecdotal evidence from others.
Okay. As I'm understanding you, an important reason why this project is so much cheaper than anything else you'd be able to sign on to is because the existing Calpine facility is there, and they have the capacity to bring gas in, the capacity to get the power back out, and some of the other facilities, it's mainly a matter of adding turbines. Is that correct?
One turbine, yes.
And I was going to go back and refresh myself, and I thought it's easier to just take everybody's time and ask you. Is the existing facility one unit or multiple units?
It's one unit.
And are you the customer of that?
We are.
And you're receiving rate recovery from all five states?
Yes.
How long has that been online?
Calpine, I believe, went into service, and you could ask the Calpine gentleman. I thought it was 2007.
Okay, that's more than a couple years.
Yeah.
So, and you expressed some concern that if this was denied or that you did not take this deal, that someone else may, Minnesota Power, or someone else may take this opportunity to build up to make use of this excess capacity that's there.
That is potentially there. It's not built yet, but yes.
I mean the excess capacity in the gas line coming yes. in and the parts that are
yes, I would expect Calpine will try to monetize that with somebody.
So if that happens, would it be fair for a customer to say that in the previous cases when you were granted rate recovery for what's already constructed there, that these commissions should have looked more skeptically at what was being built because now NSP customers are paying for whatever additional size gas line is there that has this excess capacity and the other things that are there? Would that then in hindsight have been a mistake to have granted you full rate recovery for that?
I think if you would have, and that was a question at the time when we looked at it, of whether that was somehow hurting us economically. But the fact is that Calpine won that competitive solicitation with their project, with the design that they came in. And so to the extent that we would have switched to another entity and not accepted theirs, it would have actually been a higher cost for our customers. So the fact is, Calpine won a competitive solicitation with the design that they had, and they were able to make their economics on their side of the table work and still construct the plant the way they did.
So it was the best deal you could get at the time, even though potentially NSP customers might be paying for something that is used by other customers down the line.
Again, NSP is taking a portion of this for a period of time. To the extent that it gets built out, then you could look at it that way. But the fact is, we are essentially renting the conversion of energy at that plant for a period of time. And we do it at a set price. How Calpine makes their difference, how they set up their bonds, who gets the back end value, because this asset's a 40-year asset, who gets the value in the back end versus the front end, you can have those questions all the time with purchase power agreements and trying to figure out who gets the benefit and who should have paid what price. But the fact is, Calpine won in a competitive solicitation for the period of time that they offered us the conversion rights. Therefore, our customers were getting the best deal we could, regardless of what Calpine does with the facility or the back end of the life of the asset.
So, and if this is something that should be put off until we're in confidential session, you can just tell me that. But I'm not looking for specific numbers. But the term of the deal we're talking about here today, you talk about it as a low-cost deal. Is it a guaranteed price throughout the full term of the deal, or will it fluctuate with gas prices?
The what Calpine's offering us is what we call a tolling arrangement. In other words, we're responsible to bring the fuel to them, and we're responsible for the cost of the fuel. They have a set cost of renting the facility, essentially, to convert gas energy into electricity for us. That is a set price. We bear the risk, our customers bear the risk, of natural gas prices that go into the facility. That's not part of what Calpine offers us.
Okay. I'm going to kind of get back to that in a little bit, but can you imagine a world where the Clean Power Plan is overturned and where the MATS rules are never enforced? I don't know the legal status of that right now. My understanding is they're kind of shut down, but if EPA could bring that back, but they'd have to justify it on based on cost and such. But can you imagine a world where neither of those are ever fully implemented?
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, so that Sherco did not need to have the SCR installed, and there's not a problem from a CO2 perspective, in hindsight, we have looked at this and felt years down the road that we should have kept Sherco open and not done this, especially if gas prices go up?
Yeah, so what you're asking me to do is somewhat look at a hypothetical to say, you know, clean air quality standard doesn't come into effect, regional haze doesn't come into effect, I forget what the other standard is, that would potentially affect the need for SCR. None of those things come into effect, not MATS. So, I mean, no additional regulation whatsoever would happen.
I was talking specifically MATS because the court has for now ruled on that, and the Clean Power Plan because that's going to be under litigation.
So the issue that's driving potential risk of SCRs, selective catalytic reduction units, on those plants, not MATS and not Clean Power Plan. It's all of these other regulations that we've talked about. When you start looking at having to add $400 to $500 million of capital and recover that over what could be 5 to 10 years of remaining life associated with the coal plant, that coal plant becomes very, very expensive. And I think that's the problem that we're facing, is that even aside from these other issues, the chances of those units having some sort of SCRs on them in this period of time is pretty high. And based upon what we've looked at, and we certainly provided that modeling in the resource plan, you wouldn't want to add those units because of the cost. Then you're ending up having to shut down those units when those SCRs would be needed. And again, what we struggle with as a company, if that happens in 2030, 28, 20, 31, 32, you've got potentially 75% of your baseload with Prairie Island 1 and 2, Monticello, and the two Sherco units all retiring in potentially a five-year period. We're very concerned about stepping off that kind of cliff because we really think we have to bring these in ratably. And that's one of the reasons why we moved it up, is that it allows us to transition that base load over closer to a 15-year period and not all at once. Because when you talk about reliability, you certainly don't want to change a system like that. And we already know the nuclear facilities are going to face uphill battle for life after 60.
I just still find it odd that the Sherco thing didn't come into play until so recently, so suddenly. You knew about the need for SCRs a long time ago, and yet that was just recently announced, almost, it seems, at the start of this procedure.
We actually filed, and we've been asked by the Minnesota Commission to evaluate the operations of Sherco 1 and 2. We filed reports 2 years ago, management reports, and that's what started the discussion about Sherco 1 and 2. We had to address it in our resource plan filing in January, and we identified the risk of potential SCRs. And as we came down the road to see exactly what was going to happen with our baseload plants and how do we transition, based upon how expensive Monticello was, based upon the additional requirements that Fukushima required of our nuclear plants, we identified in the resource plan comments that our capital estimates to keep Prairie Island open are going up pretty significantly. So all of those things lead to more of a concern about what happens with those baseload nuclear plants. We take this in totality and we say, realizing now the uphill battle on those nuclear facilities, we want to keep them through their end of life. We don't want to retire those early. How do we start transitioning our fleet? How do we do it in a ratable way to allow our workforce to work their way into this process? And how do we do it so we migrate the system? Because we don't want to be in a situation that we cause problems or have significant transmission additions or something like that to modify our fleet.
Okay. And I'd let you pick whether we're 5 years, 10 years out, somewhere down the road. Is there a gas price at which you would have concluded that this was a bad idea to lock into this for 20 years as opposed to buying off the market, doing renewables, keeping the coal open, something like that? That there must be some range of gas prices that you calculated in to come up with the thought that this is a good idea. So at what range would it become a bad idea?
Once you start getting, let's go back 4 years to, actually 4 years, 7 years to 2008, and gas prices were trading at $8 or $9, right? At that point in time, you don't want a lot of gas-fired generation. A lot of wind was coming on, and now you look at what potentially solar would come on. Because at that type of price, renewable energy would be lower cost than gas-fired energy. So I think we have the flexibility because you will always need gas capacity because those other resources, you can't count on the full capacity. So it's kind of a no-regret strategy. Even if you don't run the unit as much, you're getting the cost of the plant at a CT. The demand cost, the fixed cost of the plant, are at your lowest denominator unit of a CT, essentially.
Okay. And then I think my last area of questioning, the 700 to 900 megawatt excess capacity for these first few years, explain to me what that means to the system. Does that mean that some other units are non-operational more of the time during that period? Does that mean that smaller incentives for energy savings are used so that people will actually have a better price and use more? Or what really happens because of that?
Potentially all of those things are up for debate. As I said with the peakers, to the extent that we're actually long, we could actually accelerate some of the retirements, which means O&M and capital savings. One of the debates is exactly how much credit should an energy efficiency program get, or a solar program, right? Those are the things that we debated and will continue to debate as we go forward. Is there really a capacity credit that is warranted because of the length? But all of those things are going to be in the day-to-day discussion as we go forward in the resource planning environment.
Well, would having that excess lessen the amount of incentives you would put out to get people to use less?
We might propose that, but to the extent that the commission in Minnesota who drives that program, will they adopt it? I don't know if they will.
No other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any redirect, Ms. Archer?
Yes, just a few questions. Mr. Hager, Mr. Armstrong essentially stated that with so much uncertainty, you should not wait to decide to move forward. Why is it prudent to move forward with this resource at this point?
By waiting, you're actually potentially introducing more uncertainty than what we're taking on today. The fact is, you would introduce the uncertainty of will that plant be available and what's the cost of generation at that point in the future. And so the fact is you could actually be accepting more uncertainty than less.
Thank you. Could you just clarify whether or not this resource is related to the closing of Sherco or somehow intertwined with closing of Sherco units?
Well, when you have to look at the totality, because certainly we need to have the replacement capacity available as the plan for Sherco closure evolves. And this is a piece that's included in that plan. And therefore, the capacity would be used as a part to offset that capacity associated with Sherco.
Was the plan for this resource before there was any plan to cease the coal operations?
Certainly. The evolution of the start of this discussion started in 2010 with the resource plan filing and is culminating now 5 years later. So certainly it came long before we even heard about the Clean Power Plan.
So when you we're looking at this resource and then you used the information from this resource as you created your new plan that was filed on October 2nd, the new resource plan.
Correct.
Can you just speak a little bit about the need in the, whether it's a 2024-2025 time frame as being sufficient for both the need for this resource as well as the other North Dakota generation that we've been talking about?
So when we look out to the 23, 24, 25, based upon our preferred plan, we certainly have a large need in 2025. And to the extent that you look at 2024 and you look at our potential position, we would also potentially have an incremental need in and around that time frame. And again, you have to look at the totality of the plan of what we propose to add to it, whether it's conversion of the gas boiler at Sherco or something like that.
Just one more area. The peakers, we talked, there's been some discussion about the peaker plants and costs related to those peaker plants. Is another factor that's involved in whether to retire some of those plants have to do with reliability and not just the cost factors?
Certainly. As I said, you know, you're stretching the age of those peakers significantly. And to the extent you run the risk of a catastrophic failure or failure to the point that you can no longer afford to bring that capacity back up to MISO standards. So as you get, again, we're facing this issue in a lot of our plants. As you get to the end of their lives? When do you decide to retire the plant and to move on rather than putting a bunch of money into it to trying to bring it back? And that's not only the peakers, but it's going to be the same thing with the coal plants and the nuclear plants. And that's why when we talk about this level of uncertainty, we will face potentially, I mean, if you think about Sherco 3, when Sherco 3 had the failure, if it would have been a little bit different age-wise, we might have had to walk away from that because it would have never have made sense to repair it.
The repair or replace concept.
Yes, that's the risk with an aging fleet.
That's all I have right now.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, did you have any further questions of the witness?
Just briefly, Your Honor. Mr. Hager, looking at that 24 to 25 time frame, it appears that there is a loss of apparently a hydro PPA. Is that correct?
Right. The Manitoba Hydro, our current contract runs through 2025.
Okay. So we see a significant increase in the necessity of demand there in that time frame, correct? Upwards of over a gigawatt?
Yes.
If NSP is to wait until 2025 to develop the resources necessary to generate that amount of power, aren't you looking at some very significant capital expenditures in 2025?
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that going to translate into a fairly significant rate spike for the consumers?
Yes, it would.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong.
Since we're talking about potentially, isn't it potential that the Manitoba Hydro could be extended also?
From the initial discussions we've had with Manitoba, and actually going up there next week to talk to them some more, their proposed extension is fairly close to their current price, and that would be very expensive compared to the alternatives we're looking at today.
So the answer is yes, but it'd be more expensive.
Correct.
Thank you. And I didn't hear an answer to Commissioner Chrisman's question about what price of gas would kind of be the tipping point where this project becomes overly expensive, I guess, to the customers. Have you done that analysis?
I don't think it will. My point was, to the extent that natural gas capacity is necessary on the system, even with solar and wind, and this is essentially capacity at a combustion turbine price, which is the lowest common denominator, we wouldn't expect to go below that. Even if you didn't run the plant from an energy perspective because natural gas costs were high, you just held it for the peak day. You held it for a reliability sense. And your energy is produced by wind and solar, the other potential alternative. You would still want this plant because even at that situation, running it, it has a 7 heat rate. So it converts gas to electricity at a 7 multiplier. CTs convert it at 10 multiplier. And so you take, essentially, if it's $8 gas, you get $56 power. And if the CT, $8 gas, you get $80 power. So even if it runs just for the hot summer hours in the future, it'll be lower cost potentially than a CT. And it doesn't stop you from doing these other resources, such as wind and solar, to provide the energy. So it's kind of like a no-regret strategy. That's why it's very difficult to say, is there a tipping point of natural gas? Because reality is, if it's there for the capacity value and it's at a low cost, you don't care if it runs.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions from the staff?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify the record a little bit since there was all this discussion about what Claire Moeller may have said or have thought or does think. Basically, what he said is hearsay and what he might think is probably conjecture. Is there any written statement that you, like, is there a MISO, a report or a statement from management or anything like that that can be submitted that the commission can refer to? Instead of just who said what to whom?
Yes, MISO puts out an adequacy report as a part of this, and we can make that available.
And is that like quarterly or how often? Like what's the most recent one or what's one that would be relevant to this case that we should?
I know I have seen one in the last 6 months. I'm not sure exactly how frequent they come out because I don't necessarily look at all those reports. But we can certainly find out from you. But it's been pretty recent.
Okay. I think that would be appreciated if we have that submitted.
We'll be happy to submit that, whatever we can find as a late filed exhibit.
And it's called an adequacy report.
Resource adequacy report.
Any further questions from the commission?
Yes, ma'am. Just a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Christmas sparked did a better job trying to close the loop than I could on the going somewhere else. So who owns the pipeline that would bring the gas into the facility?
Northern Natural Gas owns the pipeline that comes to the facility, and Calpine owns the interconnection point.
Okay, and who owns the transmission line that's run by there?
They're connected to the NSP system.
So you own the transmission line?
Correct.
Okay, and then is there a substation here too?
Yes.
And who owns the substation?
I think NSP, you're stretching my...
Because I read somewhere where you guys own the substation, as I'm just trying to walk you to that answer. But
right. We own the substations, but I think they actually pay for the substations to be constructed.
Okay, so this is going to go back to my previous point. So if Otter Tail decided to do this, or MPower, Minnesota Power, you'd let them use your stuff for free?
No, to the extent that they're part of the MISO system,
they would be able to have the same price offered to, and I'll ask that of the witness, the same price that you've got offered to you, that they would get offered the same price because of the benefits of you already being there. There's no way.
No, again, you have to look at the issue of it's deliverable within MISO, and to the extent that they are a MISO customer.
I'm just saying I strongly disagree with your assessment that,
okay.
And I wanted to put that on the record too, because I think that we should just be fair about that. I think the fact that they're intervening here, they want you guys to get this. It's not like there's a long list of people in line that if you guys walk away, they're going to walk down the hall.
You might ask Calpine that question.
Very well. Thank you very much. Thank you, Kurt.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Kurt. A couple other questions for you. I'm looking at the original resource plan that was filed in January and then your update. And there's a couple things that I'm struggling with. And that is, in your original plan, and this gets to where we were talking about some of the advantages of bringing this on now, which is replacing some of the baseload generation earlier and not waiting till the end. In your original plan from January, one of the leading arguments was continuing operation of Sherco 1 and 2 through the planning period, so through 2030, allows customers to benefit from the investment in these baseload units while accomplishing 40% emission reduction and maintaining a diverse portfolio. So the company was advocating for keeping them running through the end of 2030. And now in your new one, you're advocating almost exactly the opposite. Addressing the future of Sherco 1 and 2 now helps us avoid the situation where we're replacing all of our baseload generation in the early 30s. Mm-hmm. What has changed in 9 months that makes you switch so dramatically in the, you know, use and the strategic use of those units?
Really, in the 9 months, we took a much more detailed look at what does it mean to transition our baseload fleet and how do we do it and how do we transition the workers. We positioned the January filing to say 2030 is as long as we could fathom to run those plants without SCRs. We know the question of whether there was going to have to be an SCR put on before 30 was going to be a question. But In the last 9 months, we certainly have more experience at what our nuclear costs are doing. We've seen the costs go up associated with our nuclear at Prairie Island. The idea that we might be able to extend past 60 is more of a question now. We know that it's going to be a very tough road to get past 60. We haven't concluded it completely, but it does look very difficult. And so when we started looking at our whole baseload fleet, and to the extent that we have to look at migration, based upon where we are and layering on top the potentials of the Clean Power Plan and setting out a direction so our workers and our customers have some rate stability and our workers have some certainty about what they get, we felt that it was important to go ahead and accelerate the closure of Sherco 1 and 2. And that's what's really happened in the last 9 months.
So I'm hearing two messages, that the Clean Power Plan didn't have anything to do with this, and now that the Clean Power Plan really does. I kind of wish the company would just say, what's changed? The Clean Power Plan. I mean, how can that not be a driving factor in this?
It is. It is a driving. It is one of the driving factors. I don't think it's the only factor. Certainly the transition of our fleet. Again, it's, you have to kind of broaden it to environmental in total, right? SCRs is what's going to drive the closure of Sherco.
And who decides that, the SCR? What are the factors?
EPA.
EPA? They just come and decide, okay, now is the time you have to add them, or?
All of these requirements, or at least my understanding, most of these requirements have 5-year review cycles. And so that they go in and analyze compliance activities and whether they need to strengthen the requirements associated with various existing sections under the Clean Air Act. And that in those, we could get, whether it's impact on a national park or something else, we might end up with having to put SCRs on the unit.
So the SCRs is the haze. That's the haze issue.
Could right? be regional haze. It could be ambient air quality standards. Okay. It's actually in the testimony.
Excuse me. Is it the Minnesota Health Department or is it the EPA that reviews that? And do you know the plant, like the time frames for those, the 5-year time frames?
My understanding is EPA.
Okay.
The Health Department is the one that enforces or comes up with the plans and then they file it with EPA.
Okay.
I'm reaching the edge of my knowledge of this. So I would probably have to see if we could get something back to you. We have some information in the actual write-up, in the
testimony.
Yeah, in the resource plan filing.
Okay. And then the other big question that I think our ratepayers will ask is, you went from a 40% emissions reduction goal in your original plan to a 60% emissions reduction goal by 2030.
It was really the resultant.
Result of what?
It was the resultant of establishing the plan for the base loads, that the 60% wasn't necessarily a goal. It was the resultant of when we looked at staggering the replacements and the activities that we had proposed in our original plan, actually moved us down to a 60%.
So this wasn't a goal that somebody set for you or you set for yourselves. You changed the approach for retiring your baseload, and that resulted in a 60% reduction?
Correct.
Okay, I think that concludes my questions. Thanks.
Commissioner Christman?
I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions before we dismiss your witness?
Yes, very briefly, Your Honor. I just want to clarify two items on the record. There's a lot of discussion, Mr. Hager, today about the site at Calpine and why that's advantageous. But I just want to clarify that, you know, you've testified today that there's a gas supply and there's transmission supply, but there's also an existing combined cycle plant, correct?
There is a combined cycle facility, yes.
And that existing combined cycle is composed of a combustion turbine and the steam generator portion, correct?
Correct.
And under Calpine's proposal, they would essentially be installing another combustion turbine that will also share with that steam generator, correct?
Correct.
And in your opinion, is that significantly different than just expanding an existing brownfield site?
Yes.
And is that where much of the value of the plant comes from?
That is my belief, yes.
And then just to clarify, in your supplemental rebuttal testimony, is it Appendix C has all the environmental information, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Commission, what are your wishes for lunch? It seems like this is sort of a natural time to break, perhaps for a brief lunch, but I will certainly take direction here.
Do you have a preference for length?
No.
Should we go?
You can go shorter if you want.
Till 12:30?
I think that sounds reasonable. Any objection to breaking until 12:30?
12:30 can work for us.
All right, very good. Then we'll go off the record break until 12:30.
Yes.
I love.